When you close your eyes and you fall asleep,
and it's down to the sound of a heartbeat.
Hey guys, welcome to the show. Sklar Brothers here. We are actually excited to talk sports this week because sports, it feels like some sports has happened over this past week, namely the NFL draft. We'll get into that at the top of the show. And then we have an amazing guest on the show. We have the owner of the Los Angeles Lakers, Jeannie Buss, daughter of Dr. Jerry Buss. And we get into a lot of stuff about the Lakers in an interview we did a few days ago.
She reveals a lot, Jay, about, you know, her father, a couple of decisions that her father made that she was privy to as a kid and what that was like and how that opened up the Lakers organization in the 80s to all of the city of LA and how that really entrenched basically LA, the Lakers as an LA team as much as the Dodgers. Fascinating conversation. We'll get to that. And then we have a voicemail later in the show, a really fun one that is very relevant to what's going on. But like you said, Jay, let's step up at the top and talk about the draft. I watched a lot of it. I watched a lot of day one and a lot of day two.
Yep.
Here were some, first of all, it was the highest rated draft, I think, in history, right?
Which is less about the draft and more about how much people are starving for new sports content. And we said this on another radio show that we were on.
15.5 million viewers, just to put that in context. That's unbelievable.
We said this on another radio show that the draft is all about hope, okay? And in this time of COVID-19, in this time of, you know, a lockdown and a lack of sports,
and a lack of hope, and a lack of hope, and a lack of future. We don't know what the future is going to be, so...
So this draft is about the future. We were allowed to fully enjoy the draft for its intended purposes, which was to excite you. If you're a Cincinnati Bengals fan and first you got the guy who you were gunning for, who you thought you were going to get first, the guy I went back and watched last night, LSU versus Oklahoma in the college football playoff. What Joe Burrow did in that game.
6 touchdowns and ran for one. I mean, it was unbelievable.
But his pocket presence, his ability to create when he needed to create, his ability to, his decision-making, okay? Decision-making is something you can't teach. Your ability to see the field and make a choice and make a play, make the athletic play that coincides with the right choice that you just made. This kid has it all, I think, right away in the same way. This is going to sound like a bold prediction. In the same way that Andrew Luck came in and made Indianapolis a playoff team, I think that as soon as we can play football again, as soon as we have the NFL, Joe Burrow makes the Cincinnati Bengals with AJ Green on the outside with other weapons. Joe Burrow makes the Cincinnati Bengals a playoff team, period.
Well, don't forget they have Joe Mixon, who is ready to do what he needs to do. If he has to punch out a woman at a bar, he'll do it.
Hey, come on. That was at a Taco Bell.
But the idea that he has weapons and whatnot, and it's not an organization that is perennially 2-14. Like you said, you know, the reason that Andrew Luck was able to step in and make them a contender right away is that the whole reason they got Andrew Luck was that the year before they lost Peyton. So you lose Peyton Manning and then
they went 1-15. And then the next year they get the top pick and they get Luck. So now the Bengals have the top pick and they have a chance to immediately change of organization. This is not a guy who's going to sit behind someone for a long time before.
And yes, the Ravens are going to be great because they figured something out with Lamar Jackson. They had a great draft, the Ravens, in my opinion. They, again, picked so smart, a lot of the players they selected. But the truth of the matter is you wind up, what was interesting for me is that the day two felt like a day one day because there were so many names coming off the board, names from LSU, names from guys we watched into the NCAA playoffs. That were just the college football playoffs that were, so these are big time names going to teams like a Xavier McKinney, the safety for Alabama. The fact that he went on the second day and midway through the second day, you're like, this is a first day guy going on the second day. So a lot of teams have a lot of reason to feel good. The interesting thing, of course, to me, and I know it was to you as well, was the fact that we're doing this at home and, you know, we're cutting to the coaches at their sequestered in their homes, quarantined in their homes. First of all, There were some funny, of course, moments that you just don't see at the funniest.
Oh, yeah, thing. Like the girlfriend sitting on the player's lap and then the mom yanking her out,
yeah,
and throwing her out of the frame.
And basically a foreshadow of what's going to happen to her anyway. She didn't need to do that, mom.
The mom whispered in her ear, he's going to cheat on you now.
Right, exactly. You're done. You're out. Like, she could have just said, you can stay there now, but, and you better enjoy this because he's going to cheat on you later. That's what she could have said. CeeDee Lamb, who was on his phone, and then his girlfriend tried to grab the other phone in his hand, and then he grabbed it right back. There was that great moment. There's just the moment of, like, looking at Bill Belichick's dining room, and you're like, "What? Why does he have
him letting his dog up on the chair?" Which I was like, I would not have pegged him as a guy who would let his pets go up on the chair
in a Belichick house. He'd probably run a tighter ship. And like,
and why did he have that?
Why did he have that break front? Do you know what I'm saying? I kept on asking myself. This is the way I feel whenever I watch like why? What's on Nancy Pelosi's fridge? Right. You know, I'm like behind her. Why did Chuck Schumer not shut the doors to his hallway?
Shut the hallway door.
Shut the hallway door, Schumer. Let's just shut the doors if you're going to do an interview. But that's, to me, was a fascinating thing. And the best part, and we'll do this last thing, then we'll get into the show, was Mike Vrabel. Again, these are not camera people. We're trying to do our podcast. When we do our podcast, our daily podcast, Jay, you and I, basically, we need the help of Brendan, our wonderful engineer, but we have to do a lot of heavy lifting that we ourselves aren't prepared to do. And a lot
of times, we make mistakes. We make mistakes every other day. We make a mistake.
But 15.6 million people, I wish, were watching our podcast. They're not. 15.6 million people watch Mike Vrabel, and in the corner of Mike Vrabel's room, off of a mirror looking down the hall, saw his son taking a shit.
Yeah.
Door open. Who, I know it's your house, but who craps with the door open when there are people over?
That's a level of confidence that I can't
I'll even never approach. Have. I'll never have it. I will never approach that level of confidence. But if you freeze the frame, you will see Mike Vrabel, who many people said Tennessee had a good draft, but some people said they kind of, you know, they shit the draft a little bit. You open the door and let everyone see what you did a little bit, Mike Vrabel's son. So just understand your framing. This is a great lesson in life. Understand what's in your frame. Understand what you're projecting out to the world. Once you do that, then you can understand that then and only then will you keep your house in order. You hear that, Mike Vrabel? All right, that's our top segment. When we come back after the break, the great Jeannie Buss, owner of the Los Angeles Lakers, joins us to sit down and talk all things Lakers and the NBA and her father. It's a great interview. Stick around. We'll be back with more View from the Cheap Seats right after this. Hey guys, welcome back to the show. As promised, we have a fixture in what I consider to be one of the premier sports organizations in all of sports, the LA Lakers. And I'm not just saying that because we live in LA. We grew up in St. Louis and we were still super aware of the Lakers in the 80s. Jeannie Buss, thank you so much for joining us on the show. How are you?
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, it is. I mean, this year was like the best year for the NBA, I thought. In recent memory, it's such a shame that the season had to get cut short because the battle that was going on in LA, I mean, we've never seen anything like it. I don't think we've ever, because there have been teams. Yes, there was the Subway Series of the Yankees and the Mets, but they only played in the World Series. Like, you're in the same conference with the Clippers and going toe to toe. Tell us what that was like this year, just seeing that firsthand.
Well, I mean, I think you also have to throw in there the Golden State Warriors. I mean, for me, it had been, you know, it's been 7 years since we've been in the playoffs. So we've watched Golden State dominate, you know, the Clippers obviously being really good. You know, it really was on us to, you know, raise our game so that we could be part of the conversation again. And so, you know, the idea that the Lakers are at the top of the Western Conference, you know, yeah, it's been, you know, in terms of when we could play basketball, we were doing pretty good.
So the first game of the year when you guys played the Clippers, like, I can't even remember a first game of an NBA season being that. I'm like, we're looking at the Western Conference Finals preview right here. I mean, I think you wouldn't say that, but I'm telling you, as a sports fan, I'm watching that. And it was exciting. I mean, as far as the first game of a season, wasn't that incredible?
You know, we lost. So for me, it wasn't as incredible but certainly I think that kind of gave us an indication of what we needed to do and the direction to go in. And certainly we, you know, figured it out. And, you know, as we got later in the season, then we were able to, you know, to bring our A game when needed to contend with the best teams in the league.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I think a huge factor in that is the fact that you have two superstars having to try and understand how to play with each other and how to complement each other. And that obviously doesn't happen in game one. That happens in game 25 and then builds by game 40. And then in game 60, you're hopefully clicking on all cylinders heading into the playoffs. And now you have, you know, even in the context of watching this Jordan documentary, which I'd love to get your thoughts on as well, The Last Dance, but the fact that Jordan had Pippen, when Jordan didn't have Pippen, even when they had won all that, those first games in 1997, 98, they were like a 4-4 team. So you realize how much, you know, this is a league of not just one player, but you need one plus two knockout punches, and then you need amazing role guys. Am I right to say that?
I don't set a roster. Like, I'll never be that type of owner that thinks I'm smarter than the basketball people. But certainly, I think what Rob Pelinka has built in terms of our roster and our coaching staff, which is, an elite coaching staff from top to bottom. And, I think the combination of those two things has really paid off for us.
How hard is that to do, though? It's your money. And you know what I'm saying? Like, you can kind of see like Jerry Jones drafting from his yacht. And you're like, well, that, okay, you clearly tone deaf in these times to draft from you have a $250 million yacht, fine. But I'm saying that translates into him being on the field, like making decisions and all that other stuff. It's your team. You can do it the way you want. How difficult is it to be hands-off enough to just say, okay, I delegated you to be this player operations person, this general manager, and this, you be the coach and I'll do my thing and provide you with what you need to do to be successful?
Well, lucky for me, I learned from, you know, who might be arguably the most, the greatest or most successful owner of all time in Dr. Jerry Buss. Mm-hmm. And that was how he put together teams, that he was always a presence, which I think is important to the fans and to the players and to, you know, just the landscape, that you have an engaged owner who cares and is going to put everything that they have in terms of resources to, build a team that can contend for a championship. So, I learned from Dr. Jerry Buss how to do things. And I think that while there's challenges along the way, and we're like every other team, we have to, play by the rules of the collective bargaining agreement and the other rules that are in place to make sure that all 30 teams have an ability to compete for a championship. And, you have to take all those factors and then do your best. And it's hard to win in this league. And you don't do that unless you have talent. And that was one of the areas that we wanted to make sure that we solidified was, bringing in a strong team of talent to give our scouting department everything that they needed to make sure that we drafted well.
Right.
And then, of course, with the G League and developing those players in a way that it gives them a seamless transition from G League to NBA.
I'm curious to hear your perspective on the G League, as you know, we're fans of the University of Michigan, and Michigan just lost a five-star kid, Isaiah Todd, and you're seeing other kids going like, hey, I'm not going to college, I'm going to the G League. And I've heard the argument in many ways that this is good for both sides of the equation. Obviously, Michigan lost a five-star kid, but you've got now guys who don't want to go to college, who really just want to be NBA players, who would have gone to college for a year because we're making you. And then they're like, okay, I just want to go straight to the G League. So now college, it almost kind of levels the playing field a little bit over there as well. I mean, was that a conscious decision by the NBA?
I think over time, you know, it's important for us to take the responsibility of developing our players. Mm-hmm. And one thing that I learned I've learned many things from Phil Jackson, but, you know, you really cannot determine who a player is until they're 25, 26 years old. And everybody matures differently. And, you know, if you're drafting players at 19 and now, you know, at some point, possibly 18 years old, then you have to take accountability for how, you know, you're training those players, giving them the resources, allowing them to mature at whatever rate that they need to, and, you know, investing back. So I do think it's an obligation, not only of our league, but every professional league,
yeah,
to have some kind of investment in the future of the players that will be playing in your league.
Why do you think the NBA, which in our opinion, the NBA of all the major sports leagues is like the most nimble, the most socially conscious? I remember when we were in Charlotte and they were the political thing of the bathroom laws. I remember
we're doing comedy. We're doing stand-up comedy in Charlotte and we're ripping the bathroom laws. And some of we're getting some blowback from some people in the crowd. And
we were seeing banners for the All-Star game on streetlights. And then basically the NBA said, you either address this or we're not putting our All-Star game there. And then they pulled it. I thought that was just an unbelievably socially conscious move, and the whole league being that nimble. That's pretty impressive. Why do you think the NBA is able to be that way, whereas other leagues are having a harder time doing that?
I think our leadership, in terms of our commissioner, Adam Silver, and I think that, you know, I would say, you know, I don't know the exact number, but more than half the teams have turned over in terms of ownership in the last 10 years or so. And I think that you have a younger, more, I guess, socially responsible, you know, group of owners, investors who believe in what sports can mean to a community and to, you know, really do right by, you know, doing what's right in society and being a leader in that way. And we as a league, you know, encourage our players to have a voice.
Yep.
And also to not have a voice if they don't want to. It's not like, you know, we're only, you know, drafting people who want to be activists and take those kind of roles. It's really however the player or the, you know, front office or whoever the NBA, you know.
Yeah.
Between all the employees of teams and players and things like that, we encourage our people to have an opinion, to have a voice, and stand up for what they believe in.
I mean, in direct contrast to the NFL and the kneeling and all that stuff at the national anthem, that to me was, it just felt like your league, yes, you stand for the national anthem, your league, but it showed how minor that was in comparison to what you allow your players to be able to say and have their voice. And yeah, I guess locker rooms are smaller in the NBA. And so it's more of a cohesive group, but mm-hmm. It just is fascinating to me that it can be so social, such a socially conscious league like that.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask about, because, you know, we had gotten to know Royce White, great player, and who had talked a lot about and dealt with like anxiety. It's so interesting because now we're shining more of a light on mental health issues and whatnot. And players, you know, not one, it's the simple thing of there's so much travel in the NBA. There is so much travel. And the idea of like, I can't fly. I have like tremendous anxiety from flying. And that's, you know, it's a major part, a major stumbling block. How do you think the NBA as a league is trying to address that type of a thing so that great players like Royce White, who may have issues, you know, in terms of mental health things that they're dealing with, how does the league going to move forward as that, as far as that goes in terms of helping those people out?
I mean, I think we're a leader in that area as well. You know, the NBA has a mandate that every team have a mental wellness, you know, coordinator and a program that could provide resources to the players and to the employees as needed. And, you know, that's like it's a tricky situation to be involved in because a lot of medical activity is covered under HIPAA laws and, you know, maintaining a player's privacy is completely important to us, but also having those resources. And for us, by example, we moved into a new practice facility 3 years ago, and part of that was a partnership with UCLA Health. So now we have the resources of UCLA Health as needed. And I, you know, so in the last 2 or 3 years that we've been working with them, I've been astonished at how many times they have been a resource that I wouldn't have thought of before in a circumstance, excuse me. And certainly we had an enormous tragedy take place, you know, and it's hard for me to talk about, so I'm not sure how much I can talk about, you know, losing Kobe Bryant, but the effect on our team and our employees was profound. And, you know, it was a blessing to have UCLA there to help, you know, support and help people cope through it. And it is a priority of this, of our league and of our team, especially to, you know, to value that, those resources and to support our players as best as we can.
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to get too deep into the Kobe of it all, but that was, he was really becoming that sort of elder statesman. It's so funny because we think of players as who they were at their peak. So I think of, like, to me, obviously Kobe and Shaq was, it was an unbelievable time. Phil Jackson, Kobe, Shaq, late 90s, 2000, like that team was the team. But then Kobe coming back and winning the back-to-backs like years later, after Shaq had won one on his own with Dwayne Wade, that to me was the absolute definition of that dude's career as a player and what he meant for the Lakers and the organization on the whole, you know. And then so that's the way you think of him. At that point, you cut it off and you're like, he's that guy who could not be stopped. He's scoring 84 points in a game. But he was really becoming the elder, a great elder statesman and this just ambassador for the league, winning an Oscar and all that other stuff. It's a huge hole that cannot be filled. It just is. But, you know, I think you guys, his memory lives on. And I think you guys are lucky to have a guy like LeBron there who in many ways I see is going to be that guy. I really do feel
kind of already. He kind of already is starting to be that guy.
Right. So
he has been that guy, but he could be that guy. I mean, no one can be Kobe.
I just think you guys in a terrible situation. I'm glad you guys have LeBron. So where were you when you found out that you got LeBron?
I mean, I think I was like everybody else, you know, it was just, you know, Sunday morning and, you know, not being able to understand what's being said.
I'm saying go back the year before. Where were you when you heard the news that you had gotten LeBron James?
Oh,
that came up. Let's go back to a much happier time because, I mean, I know, I don't want to, there's no need to needle it, but
thank you.
Let's go back to LeBron when you heard the news that he was coming. Because
yes, and I mean, like, and you said, you know, we're lucky to have LeBron. Any team would be lucky to have LeBron. Yeah. He is a leader on and off the court, and what a talent! My gosh, you know, when you're in the Western Conference, you don't really appreciate the players in the Eastern Conference because we don't see them that much. But you know, watching LeBron even at practice, he really is in a league of his own. You know, hearing that he had met with Magic Johnson and he was, you know, very interested in coming and getting the call that he decided that this was the team that he wanted to join meant the world to me, because it kind of changed people's perception of our organization and, you know, trying to get things into a different direction. And you know, a lot of people were talking about that, you know, LeBron wouldn't come unless you had these players in place. And, you know, but he believed in what Magic laid out in front of him, which is exactly how we got to where we are now in terms of the kind of team that we were building and the kind of offense that we want to run. And, you know, so here we are. You know, his vote of confidence kind of let everything else fall into place.
Go ahead.
Yeah. How happy are you that LeVar Ball is no longer connected to the league?
I got along well with LeVar and the whole Ball family. I appreciate any parent that
is involved.
Really, yeah. It's and believes and is an advocate for their child. Isn't that the way every parent should be? And I'd gotten used to that because when I first got involved in sports, I promoted tennis events at the Forum, the Great Western Forum, and I got to know Richard Williams, who is the father of Venus and Serena Williams, and who very much believed in the greatness of his daughters, even when they were, you know, 12, 13 years old. He knew that they were going to be spectacular, and he was right.
He was right.
Right.
Well, I mean, we're going to start to see LeVar Ball a lot more with LaMelo. He may be the first or second pick in the draft. You never know. I mean, you're going to start to see him again and what type of an impact he has on the league. But it is amazing. What was more difficult last year, living through having LeBron and not, you know, LeBron sort of not reaching where he wanted to be, and I'm sure you guys as well, or the 6 years leading up to LeBron? You know what I mean? What was harder, having LeBron there and not reaching that, knowing, okay, if we just add maybe the one more piece, the Anthony Davis piece, we're going to be okay this year. And knowing that you get to this place, was that a difficult year that year?
Yeah, because I was anxious to get back into the playoffs. And when the playoffs kind of left the picture, that was a huge disappointment for me. But it just meant that we had more to do and that we weren't where we needed to be. And, you know, I think also what was distressing, you know, in that last season before this season, was the amount of leaks that were coming out of our organization. And I, you know, that was a big priority for us to shore up that kind of activity. And I think we've done a pretty good job getting out of the drama and the headlines and just being about the work.
I mean, it feels like when you talk about leaks and things like that, these are issues I feel like that teams didn't have to deal with 20 years ago, 25 years ago, before Twitter, before 24-hour news sources, before all that stuff, before people could find leverage in the media. That really kind of wasn't a thing. I mean, I'm seeing that even in this documentary about the Bulls in the 90s. It's like I knew Jerry Krause. I knew of that name, but I didn't know what was happening between that. I didn't know that Jordan would just park his car anywhere in the team parking lot and just get out and walk, you know? You know what I'm saying? It's different now. You got a camera there, and that's suddenly beamed onto this site, onto this blog, onto this thing in a way that it wasn't before. And I feel like it's probably gotten harder to like run a team and a ship now than 20 years ago.
Well, you know, it's you know, information, while wasn't always 100% accurate, the when stuff would leak out and really being like, I don't know who I can trust. Mm-hmm. And that's terribly undermining for an organization. It's impossible to do business because you don't know who you need to eliminate from the room to get rid of that leak and how, you know, and why. Why is this happening?
What are they doing it for?
Yeah, what are they doing it for? What are they trying to accomplish? And it was very disturbing to me. And so it's been very refreshing to not have to deal with that this season.
You know, it's so interesting because the reason why this year was such a great year was that we didn't know what was going to happen. Yes, the Lakers were on top, but the Clippers were fantastic. You could say in the East, Toronto, Milwaukee, Philadelphia could have had a run there. The Heat were playing great. Utah was great. There were so many great teams. Yeah. It wasn't like the last few years when you were just saying to yourself, all right, Golden State's going to win. You don't want to say that at the beginning. That's what fans are saying. I'm sure as an owner, you're not saying that. The interesting thing to me is how much players and teams don't subscribe to that notion. Like every time a team goes on the court, they're like, we're going to win. You know what I mean? That those Cleveland, LeBron, Cleveland teams, even though they were way undermanned compared to the Golden State Warrior teams, they're like, we're going to win. That's what they think in their brain.
Yeah.
How isn't that amazing how athletes kind of have that? They put the blinders on in a way that actually I think is good for them.
I agree.
Sorry, that was like a long way to get a yes answer. But that's yes.
Good. I like it.
Well, go
ahead. All right, here's my question. As we sit in this unknown, and maybe you know more than we do, how would you, if given, like, let's just say you have a way to do this, you have a way to come back and
Adam Silver calls you after this interview and says, all right, Jeannie, I'm going to let you, you're the one.
How do we end this season? How do we come back? What do we do? How do we run the playoffs in a perfect world? How would you do it? And you can't do a full playoffs. You can't do it as is.
I'm not going to speculate on any of this. I mean, we're one team in a league of 30, and we have to look at how all of this is going to play out. You know, and we're not only in the United States, we have a team in Canada as well. And so all these factors are going to figure into what we're going to be able to do. So to even start talking about that, would be kind of just a waste of time.
I know, but for
knowing,
us.
But I want to see us finish the season. I want to have a conclusion. I would like us to not have to, you know, cancel any of the games, but none of that is known right now. So I don't want to go through that, but I would like to see a resolution to this season.
I feel like it has to. For us, you know, having followed the NBA pretty closely for the last like 30 years of our lives, it feels like this season of all the seasons felt the most wide open as we head into the playoffs. And obviously front runners like the Lakers and I would put Milwaukee in there too in the East, but there was excitement building in the season. I mean, you can even take it from the All-Star game, which I feel like this format of the All-Star game, the fourth quarter of the All-Star game that's the greatest All-Star game we've had, period. Am I right?
Your guy makes the winning free throw. I mean, come on.
It was very exciting from that point of view. I have to say I was in Orlando in 1992 when Magic Johnson made his comeback. And that was a special thing for so many bigger, more reasons. But yes, in terms of like the competition and the fun and watching the players, you know, interact and you know, work their butts off to win that game.
Two groups of fans that they're playing for.
Players arguing calls. Arguing calls in an All-Star game. Come on.
I mean, it's like, it really was. The All-Star game is such a hard thing to crack because you want to celebrate the best players for being who they are and being, you know, achieving that level. And while it may not mean, the games may not mean something, in the, what do you say at the end of somebody's career? He was a 10-time All-Star. He was, the, you know what I mean? He was 8 All-Star games in a row. He was the MVP of the All-Star game. Those things actually mean something when a player's career is over. So you can't discount the All-Star game ever. But it's a very difficult format to crack in any sport, baseball, mm-hmm. hockey. And so I just think you guys, again, you guys got it right this year in a very, very cool way that actually included the fans that I thought, man, this is the way it's got to be. And the other leagues are going to have to follow that for sure. Let's talk just because we've lived in LA since 99. And, you know, we came from somewhere else. So many people, I know you know this, like LA is a transplant city. People come from other places. I think it's hard to have a sports organization here because so much of sports growing up in St. Louis, being St. Louis Cardinals fans, you know, seeing how that gets passed on from generation to generation. It's hard to, like, I looked at the LA Kings success in 2010, 2011, 2012. And I was like, the LA Kings have rabid fans. They have 20,000 of them and they're all in this arena right now. Okay. Whereas I don't know how deeply it goes. I just don't know how deeply it, how far back it goes in generation. The Lakers and the Dodgers are those generational organizations. I mean, it's almost like against all odds in a town that wouldn't do that. How do you guys do that? Is it just winning, or how does that happen where you guys can implant yourself into the LA culture?
Well, you know, it's you know, that's exactly why my dad bought the team, was because he was not born here in LA, but he visited as a child in his head, you know, someday I'm going to live in Los Angeles. And so when he had the opportunity and the resources to do so, he did. And he loved his new hometown and he wanted LA to have a team that they could be proud of, because he felt that there was such a bias in the media for East Coast teams.
New York, that, yep.
That you never, that LA teams didn't get the respect around in all the professional sports. And so he wanted to buy the Lakers and make LA proud. And that was kind of his gift to the city that accepted him as their own. And so I think that, because he had the mindset of what it means to be a transplanted person in LA and how a team like the Lakers, especially when they're winning, can unite a community that is very spread out, very diverse. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't know. Certainly the Lakers had, you know, some, they'd won a championship in LA before my dad was the owner. So, you know, and having a player like Wilt Chamberlain, sure, and Jerry West and Gail Goodrich and
Elgin Baylor,
you know, Elgin Baylor, all these great players, you know, maybe that helped too. But certainly the 80s was kind of a turning point when, you know, things were tough in LA and very divided by gangs and, you know, the Lakers winning really meant something to people in terms of what it means to make Los Angeles your home.
Yeah, I mean, it is amazing. And in that context, you just see how important Magic Johnson was. Okay, getting him from Michigan State in 79, winning then in 80 with him. I mean, you just, to kickstart that whole thing, I mean, you were a kid as it's going on. How are you viewing it through the 80s as it's all happening and it's all going down?
You know, it was showtime, and you know, it was just all new to me, and not really understanding, you know, what sports could mean, and you know, like the environment was changing so much. I remember, you know, back in the early 80s, you know, you didn't show your home games on television. You didn't broadcast your home games because that would cut into your ticket sales.
Because
if people could stay at home and watch the game, they wouldn't, you know, buy a ticket. So, you know, when Dr. Buss decided, hey, you know, I'm selling out the Forum, and I'd really like for everybody who wants to see the Lakers play at the Forum at home, we should really broadcast the games. And it was kind of unheard of. But, you know, that's kind of what was important to him, was to, you know, he said, like, you know, Jeannie, just think, what I've done is I've increased the capacity at the Forum so that now everybody who wants to see a game can see the game. And that was just a different way of thinking. So, you know, he was brilliant for so many reasons in terms of just being a mathematical genius. But, you know, he also had the passion of a fan. And that's, you know, the fans knew that he cared about it. And, you know, maybe every year you don't win, but they know that he's doing everything he can to get the team in a position to win.
So growing up in St. Louis with no NBA team and watching those finals, like, it could not have been more different. You got the parquet floor of Boston Garden, and it's,
which it always felt like the air conditioning was broken there.
The air conditioning is broken. It's dark. It's like, I don't know. It just felt like this old building that was like hundreds of years old. And then you come to LA and it's like yellow. It's bright, and like, it feels like there are windows everywhere, and you can see, you know what I mean? Like, for kids, we're just seeing this going like, okay, here's the old establishment, here's the other. And we're,
who do you want to root for? Do you want to root for the team that's lighting it up and running a fast break like every 2 seconds and dunking? Yeah, it became a brand, not just for LA, but for all the disenfranchised across the country. Sports fans like us, we're 10, 11, 12, 13 years old, that's it. Become you immediately take to a team like
that. It's amazing that, like, aesthetically as well as the team itself was built in a way that was, you know, they say styles make fights, you know, in heavyweight boxing, and you know, two different styles makes a great fight, and that's exactly what it was in the 80s. You had, you know, the Bird, DJ, McHale, Parrish versus, you know, Showtime. Just amazing. I mean, it's amazing that you lived through that, and now you are getting to carry that on today with a whole new group of people.
Just trying to live up to the standard that he set, and you know, we're doing our best. I mean, the NBA continues to evolve in terms of you know, how many teams that are, you know, in our league, and now that we have a G League and a salary cap and, you know, so many different factors than, you know, back in 1980, but I think all for the health of the game and all good.
All right. Well, Jeannie, thank you so much. We'll see you soon. Okay. We'll just be in touch with you, and feel free again. All right.
Thanks, guys.
All right.
No matter, it feels so beautiful. Don't you agree?
Hey guys, welcome back to the show. Before we get out of here, we got a voicemail from Jerry Jones, who was drafting from his yacht, which was
not tone deaf at all. I mean, he was more tone deaf than David Geffen, who I would argue was so tone deaf, he was tone geff.
There was a little bit of, you know, when you saw the basement of where Roger Goodell, arguably the wealthiest, most powerful man in all of sports, like, his basement seemed like our basement where we were growing up.
Yeah.
That may not have even been his basement. I don't know where he was. My guess is he was in someone else's house or in the guest house basement of some other guest.
By the way, if you're on a 250, and we're not telling you how to spend your money, Jerry Jones, but if you're on a $250 million yacht and you are drafting there, you can never cry poor to one of your draftees ever again.
Yep.
Well, we'll see what he has to say. Jerry Jones left us a voicemail. Enjoy it.
Hello, Jason, and to a lesser extent, Randy. It's Jerry Jones, owner of the Dallas Cowboys, America's team, and the number one superpower sports franchise on planet Earth. Now, there's a lot of upheaval, a lot of hubbub going around about me drafting off the yacht this year. We drafted C.D. Lamb, wide receiver out of Oklahoma, off of the Bravo Eugenia, which is my yacht. Nothing to do with my wife, Jeannie. We do have a room for her in the back. It's an 8x8, sweet little room. She can do her makeup and listen to her stories. It's all fine. But people seem to be in an uproar over the fact that I was sitting there on a yacht that I have earned, and yes, has two helipads, one for me and one for the rest of my family, which is convenient, especially during this particular virus. We can have social distancing, or I can from them, and they can do the best they can in their copter altogether. Anyway, I was there. It was comfortable, and it was in compliance with the CDC NFL guidelines. And that's why I was also adhering not only to social distancing by having my daughter and a few other young women sit a couple cushions over on my nice couch, but they also were holding my phone for me. They were my phone valets, so that when I would make the picks, I'd say, press that number right there. No, 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 not that one. That one. That one. Oh, why did I ever raise you? Which I didn't, of course. That was Jeannie's territory, and not sure how much I got on the return for that, but everyone was fine. It was a little DIY, draft-in yacht, do-it-yourself, Jerry style, and I'm proud of it. So if you got any problems with it, and I'm talking directly to you, Randy, and somewhat to you, Jason, feel free to reach out to me, although I don't think you'd be able to get a hold of me because I am in an undisclosed aquatic location. All right, that's it for now. Jerry Jones saying, how about them Cowboys?
Set a course for Tahiti. I need some white sand under my feet.
Yeah, that's Jerry being Jerry. There you go.
There he is.
There it is. That's the show, guys. I want to tell you, all of our sports fans who love this show and listen to this show, go over to our YouTube page. YouTube, if you look on YouTube and you search Scarborough Country YouTube, you will see our page come up. Subscribe to it, please. Everyone who listens to this podcast, subscribe to it. Why? Because we have episodes of Cheap Seats on there. If you're looking for the perfect weekend or nighttime quarantine, just jump down the rabbit hole of Cheap Seats. We're going to collect all the episodes in there. We have our video of our daily podcast. We have clips of us on other shows, clips of us on other podcasts and other TV shows and whatnot, and stand up. It's great. So YouTube and search Scarborough Country, then subscribe to that page. It's a huge help to us. It's free. It costs nothing for you to subscribe to it. And then you get to enjoy all the content that we put out there for you. All the Cheap Seats we can get our hands on and put on there. So keep it in one place for you. Thanks, guys. Punch a water faucet, then go wash your hands. As we say in our daily podcast, stay socially distanced, but stay connected. And next week on the show, I'm so excited. We have a great conversation with the sports science guy, John Brinkus. Really cool conversation. So you're going to want to stay for that. See, we're getting sports in when sports doesn't even exist. It's more philosophical. We'll see you guys next week.
Star Bands Audio, a podcast network.